Yeah, thanks a lot, Lionel. Great to be here. I think last time I gave a talk in this series was on the notion of work in EU copyright law, because we were doing this project together with some media and film studies scholars from Norway and people from Amsterdam and some more people in Cambridge on originality and authorship, and questions about how whether legal notions of authorship and originality reflect creative practices and theories about creative practices. And the one thing I think when we were thinking about authorship and collaborative authorship and originality, we didn't think of government information or government works at all. No. So I don't really want to talk today about the criteria for protection as a work and to what extent your average government information, government creation meets that. I don't think that's the most interesting topic. But I think it's nicer to focus on the sort of the role intellectual property, copyright database rights, and to a very limited extent related rights play in the emerging information policy we see at the EU level, but also with some international organizations, within national administrations, the UK being a very good example, which aims to make government information much more broadly available for a host of different uses. And what's striking is that if you look to EU intellectual property law, it's virtually silent on public sector information. And today, of course, because of the Court of Justice's, I don't know whether it's a decision, but anyway, move towards defining an autonomous work concept, a uniform work concept across copyright laws, there's going to be a day when they will going to have to address this question. So under what circumstances is government produced information eligible for copyright protection or not? Because the UK is a very big exception, but on the mainland, most countries have laws which exempt at least certain categories of public sector information from copyright. You have Crown copyright and parliamentary copyright. But that's exceptional compared to other countries. So there's a trend now towards making available sharing resources held by public sector bodies. And the most important piece of legislation we have in this area at the EU level is the Public Sector Information Directive, which dates from 2003, didn't have a lot of teeth then. But it's been now been reviewed and revised. It needs to be implemented by July, somewhere in July this year, and it will oblige member states to allow reuse of public sector information. And that makes it all the more topical to talk about intellectual property rights in public sector information, because of course this affects how you can exercise your IP rights. So we have no specific copyright norms on PSI, but we have an increasing body of norms, and not just this PSI directive, although it's very important, but there are also a lot of directive and instruments at the EU level, which are more geared towards creating a trans-border e-government services and, for instance, spatial data infrastructures, which would allow better monitoring of the environment, development and execution of environmental policies. All these type of initiatives create information systems among governments, and you can already hear voices saying, okay, once we have this infrastructure, surely the data that governments exchange across Europe over these networks and according to these standards must also be available to wider society and to the private sector as well for exploitation.
Don't want to interrupt your flow, but you might come to just for my benefit, could you tell us how broad the definition of public sector information is? Would it cover anything like biobanks?
It is very broad, but the terminology in the Public Sector Information Directive speaks of documents, which is also to include data sets. But I think the question to what extent biobanks would be included or not is more about the kind of scope as to which public sector bodies does it apply. In the public in the PSI directive, the notion of public sector body is derived from the public procurement directives. I'm not sure why they did this. I mean, they were obviously looking for some type of, we have to have a definition of public sector body, where do we look? Public procurement seemed a good place. And that's a quite a broad definition. So it would cover a lot of, not just sort of your traditional, your the courts, the legislature and the executive branch of government, but can also cover Quango style organizations. That has to do with the amount of government control there is over them. I mean, they're quite complex criteria, but we can look into them a bit more later. But so in the PSI directive, public sector body is a very broad and sort of autonomous concept, which covers a lot of...
Could it be the NHS?
I think it would be the NHS. But there's on the other hand, there is so there's a broad definition of public sector body, and then certain public sector bodies like public broadcasters are excluded. And in the cultural sector and education, it's only archives and public libraries, including university libraries, if they are, not private universities, but public universities, which are included. So there are some carve-outs, but particularly in the cultural domain. So where's the open data in this story? The idea of open data is, and I can show you a slide later on, which sort of has like the key definition by the Open Knowledge Foundation, which is a very influential definition. But the key idea behind this is that there are many benefits to be had from releasing data electronically in structured format, and so that it's easy for anyone interested to work with, and very important, basically, no strings attached. So minimum exercise for IP rights, and also at the cost level, no cost or only cost of supplying the information. And as I said, I mean, national governments and the European Commission, but also, for instance, the World Bank are really sort of taking up on the idea of open data and having to stimulate this. And the data we're talking about, I think, will have to come mostly from the public sector, because for private sectors, it's not a very attractive business proposition to say, okay, release your data assets as open data, right? You have to, go for an advertising model or something. So it's not the most interesting business model for the private sector. And that's all the more so in the big data age, where data is seen as an asset which companies must guard and exploit. So when we talk about open data, I think it's more accurate to talk about open government data, because the government, public sector, is going to be the major source of this open data. If we look at the benefits, or the presumed benefits of open data, I think you can, I mean, there's a lot of benefits put forward, but I think you can sort of class them into three bigger groups. One, the top one, is actually very sort of old-fashioned transparency argument that also informs Freedom of Information Acts, but also the idea that courts should be sitting in public, that Parliament discusses in public, and that parliamentary records are public. So it's a transparency argument. The more economic rationale, that is really sort of the main driver behind the Public Sector Information Directive, is this idea there's all this value in public sector information beyond how it's used for the public task, and we must sort of unlock this. It can be unlocked by the private sector, and this will give us great new products and services. So Vice President Kroes, who was the until recently was the commissioner for the digital agenda. I mean, she'd like to speak in terms of government data is the new gold or the new oil of the big data age and that kind of terminology. And then there's a third group, which is more recent, which looks more to the sort of efficiency rationale from the public sector perspective itself. If the public sector makes data available, it also becomes available for other public sector bodies. So that's one advantage, that, that you get more efficient sharing of data resources. And you can also do things like crowdsource, engage eyeballs to solve public problems. Like you have things like Fix My Street, where you can signal whether potholes down your street, and then the public authorities know best, you know, where to go first, that kind of thing. So these are sort of like three broad rationales. And if you look at the kind of applications of open data you have, this one is this was the first time the European Parliament in the last elections last year released. It doesn't really show from this slide because this doesn't show the data, but it showed it disclosed all the election results as open data in XML, I think, which made it really easy for the press and for civil society and anybody who's interested to do all kinds of analysis on what had happened in the elections. Another example is, this is actually a UK company who's also active on the continent. And what they do is get together information from different sources, different public sources, but also they buy information in the private sector, and they make, for instance, reports. This is their flood portfolio. But what they also do, if you're interested in buying a property as a company or as a private citizen, you can get a customized report on price developments, on what's happening in that area in terms of crime rates, is there any urban planning going on, is there pollution in the soil, that sort of thing. So they get together information from all types of sources and combine it to give specific advice to companies and citizens. And they do a lot of this based on public sector data. This is a Dutch example. You can tell they have to get money from ads. This was when the Dutch Met Office actually decided to also start releasing basic weather data as open data, and a couple of companies joined in. And this one shows you the showers with like a 24-hour forecast, but down to like 15-minute intervals, which is really handy if you live in the Netherlands, and I assume also in the UK. I mean, it's, you know, if you have to go out on your bike, I sometimes check and say, like, I should go now, and I can make it without getting wet. So this is an example of ad-driven business models. This is, there's your big friend, where is he? Rufus?
Yeah, Rufus. What's he doing there?
Open Knowledge Foundation. They work with, so this is the World Bank who decided to go open data. So what they used to do, so they got, they had quite a substantial communication budget, in addition, of course, to all the money they have to actually help development and so on. And before, they would sell their publications and get like tiny amounts of, you know, tiny bit of turnover from that. And when they decided to go and just release everything openly, then they saw really an explosion of the use of their data and all kinds of interesting analysis that people were doing with them. So they actually think it's been very good for the World Bank and its reputation and its effectiveness, because they've greatly increased sort of the possibilities for others to do stuff with data on development, on education in development countries, on gender issues, all these kinds of things. And then another one, and this is actually also UK initiated, is a project which aims to disclose company data and brings it together from different sources. Not all of this is open data. Actually, in most countries, your company's register, you'd have to pay to get access to it, and you get licensing. But what would be good about this, if more parts of it were open data, is that you could actually do a lot of network analysis on looking at where company ownership is situated. For instance, to see who's trying to avoid tax where, and figure out who actually is the beneficial owner in companies. So these are a couple of examples of the kind of things that are being done with data. I think they sort of show you have the transparency, sort of classic political democratic rationale of opening up, and you have the new products and services. And this one is partly also helps the public sector itself by giving them more information about where your tax-paying or non-tax-paying companies are sort of located around the world. And if you look at sort of, I said before that Commissioner Kroes talked of open data as a new goal and so on. If you look at a couple of the figures, click a bit more. So there's a lot of estimates, like the top one I think is really over the top. McKinsey in 2013 suggested there's like $3 trillion a year worth of sort of value in open data that could be unlocked. And then there's an older report done for the European, the MAPSIR study, for the European Commission that estimated 10 to 40 billion euros a year. And one of its chief authors actually a few years ago came back and said, well, in retrospect, these were quite inflated figures, so I think they're much lower really. But they've sort of started to take on a life of their own. So like the last figure I showed was from an OECD report, which estimated at 40 billion, which was kind of so taken from that previous report partly. Even if you can debate a lot about how accurate the figures are and whether they could, you know, the kind of extrapolation they do to arrive at their figures is controversial, but there's still quite a lot of money in it either way. I've put together a short timeline. It's interesting for the data because actually originally this was one. We're on the left-hand side. There was data protection developments. And on the other hand, open data. And I tweaked this to make it IP versus open data. And it's actually kind of similar type of timeline. If you look I should explain, I guess, the red ones are actually legal instruments. Black is policy documents, some by the EC, some by the UK government, some by the Dutch government. The italic ones are more like civil society initiatives, like Creative Commons. If we look at the history of IP at the European level, so the first green paper that announced legislative initiatives, dates to 1988, which was also about the time that the EC first took up this idea of there's value in public sector information and private sector must have access to it for commercial exploitation. And what they did was come up with guidelines which basically said, member states, please, please, please give private sector access to all this data, and please also refrain from doing stuff on the market that the private sector can do. So that was around the time that the first sort of work on the database directive also started, and the actual association, I think it's an European Information Industry Association, of which I just said before to Lionel, I have no idea whether they still exist or exactly who they represent, but they argued quite forcefully in the 80s and early 90s for a right of access to public sector data, and also for public sector data to be excluded from copyright, which didn't happen because the software directive, the first ever directive, says nothing particularly about software created like by public servants or something. And the database directive, even though there was some talk of including provisions on compulsory licensing for sort of monopoly situations, in the end, it doesn't say anything about public sector information. So the public sector is sole owner or source for certain types of information, such as a company's register or a land registry, that kind of thing. Work sort of more towards, so this was maybe, you could say in a way, of the sort of like prototype open data policy, followed by a green paper. In the meantime, at the national level, so the UK was still quite conservative in this paper, but has since moved rapidly on open data. And in the Netherlands, we actually had central government policy, which was much more liberal than the later regulation that came in. So we took a couple of steps back before we now move forward again. But what you see is that here has been the developments towards this, the Public Sector Information Directive. And in parallel, you can see a development whereby most countries of the EU have adopted Freedom of Information Acts, and a Freedom of Information Act, which applies to the institutions of the EU, is this one, which is has been undergoing reform for 10 years now, and it's still not going anywhere, but there you are. But by now, most countries have Freedom of Information Acts, and they have also, of course, implemented the Public Sector Information Directive. Freedom information itself is not doing that well. I don't know whether you're familiar with Tony Blair's comments on in his autobiography. He actually called himself things like a nincompoop forever legislating freedom of information. It's like the worst thing he's done in his while he was heading Labour.
He understands what he's done.
It's a great quote. I use it sometimes because he also makes reference to Yes Minister, the series. Where was Humphrey when I needed him? So like some stage. But anyway, so that, I mean, that it's interesting, I think, that open data on the one hand is moving also in sort of like in soft law and in some parts of the Commission, but if you look at actual firm rights to access information, that's not moving that much. I mean, there's a lot of regret, I think, in the UK over the Freedom of Information Act. We have been trying to reform ours for quite a while now in the Netherlands, not really going anywhere. At the EU level, it's not really going anywhere. So I think this is quite interesting. How can governments on the one hand say, oh, open data, it's great, and we're going to do it. And on the other hand, when it comes to actually giving statutory rights of access or broadening them, be so difficult about them. But anyway, so the EU Copyright Directive, it doesn't say anything about public sector information. And I mean, we thought it didn't harmonize the work, and the European Court of Justice, of course, says it did. But I think it's telling that, and I think in the entire discussion over the sort of the catalogue of exemptions and limitations in EU copyright law, I've never seen any document where they talk of, don't many countries have exemptions for public sector information or public sector works? It's just totally ignored. What happened at civil society is that you see the developments towards using licenses as sort of like a pro-access, pro-reuse instrument, the copyleft licenses. And actually Creative Commons licenses are now pushed also by the European Commission, who last summer issued guidelines which sort of accompany the 2013 revised Public Sector Information Directive. And they say, please, if you want to set terms and conditions, be absolutely minimal about it. We prefer it if you would use licenses like Creative Commons Zero, which is basically a public domain dedication, or a license which only says you have to attribute the source and otherwise you're free to do as you please. And actually, that's also, I mean, the Dutch government has adopted, not for all, I must add, but for much of its, for all legal information, for, we also have it for the judiciary, do it for case, case law and lots of information that's published on sort of like a central government website, they've adopted Creative Commons, and the UK have sort of their version of Creative Commons in an open government license, which basically does the same as Creative Commons. So this is an example of the CC BY license. So you can share, adapt, and all you have to do is give credit, basically. And this is the open government. I don't think it's legible from there, but they were developing this. They were considering introducing Creative Commons for the UK, but the timelines weren't really right, and they were under a lot of pressure, the civil servants, to come up with something, and they liked these images better, so they made an open government license. But basically, it sort of achieves the same thing as the Creative Commons license.
And that would cover court reports and things?
In the UK? I don't know whether it covers court reports.
There's a whole debate about who owns copyright in cases, whether it's the judge or the crown or...
I see, because that's a very tricky one, because it's not clear in the...
huge literature on this, but I don't know what the outcome is.
There was a similar debate about who the data controller was in relation to judge as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, or the clerk.
The degree of marriage.
In terms of authorship, you know.
Inversely proportional to the amount of literature.
Yeah. But so... Yeah, so what does the PSI directive do? Like I said, it's member states must now ensure that documents is a terminology, which sort of maps onto what Freedom of Information Act, so usually speak of documents as well, even though it's a very broad concept. So they have to allow reuse, but the directive itself does not grant access rights, so you have to look to local law to see which information is publicly available, or where do you have a statutory right to get access. And so if information has sort of this public status, then you must be able to reuse it. And so reuse is defined as basically any other use than the kind of use for which the information was created within the public task for which it was created. So there's a completely public sector centric, confusing definition, I think. It's also quite hard to explain the difference between so what's access and what is reuse.
But that wouldn't cover, for example, freedom of information. I know lots of departments do put under the open government license freedom of information stuff, which is released to the applicant. But my understanding was copyright persists. Information that is released under Freedom of Information is a starting point.
Yeah.
Local authorities use that quite actively to try and prevent.
But you're right in saying that's a starting point. So it's not. Yeah. So. Yeah. No. So the starting point is that copyright applies even if something is released. And I think it's a say. Yeah. And I haven't come across any other system in other countries. Basically, it is freedom of information and copyright coexist. And copyright cannot, particularly not copyright held by the public sector, is not generally a good reason to refuse disclosure under freedom of information law. But once you have access to this information, copyright might still kick in to determine what you can do with the information, which from a freedom of information perspective is strange, because you would assume that if you have a statutory right to actually access something, you must have something more than just, you know, be allowed to read. I mean, particularly in this day and age, it doesn't make sense to say, okay, you have a right to access, but all you can do is read it. You can't do anything at it. And this can't do, I'm just taking the copyright restricted acts very broadly here, but I mean, it's, you know, they are broad. So basically you can't do a lot with government information that's in copyright, even though you get access. Unless you either interpret Freedom of Information Act in sort of like a broad way that access includes certain type of uses. But I don't know any instances of where courts have actually done this. which is an important reason why we must regulate this relationship between freedom of information laws and copyright claims. So the terms and conditions, so the directive still allows you to set terms and conditions, although it says try not to, but you can. And if you do, you have to be very transparent about what the terms and conditions are, use standard licenses wherever possible. You can't discriminate against different user groups, so you have to, the conditions have to be same for similar types of uses. And this is new in like the latest the version of the directive, that it's made explicit that you shouldn't unnecessarily restrict reuse possibilities. I mean, that to me was obvious under the first directive, because it means, well, but anyway, so now it's in there, and it also says the conditions should not contravene competition law, which is also fairly obvious, I guess. An important point in practice is are the rules on pricing. What changed in the 2013 directive is that the default principle is now you supply this information for free, or at most at the cost of supplying it, what they're called the marginal cost of dissemination. And in some instances, there can still be full cost pricing. So these are sort of like the main terms of the PSI directive. What are the other EU copyright directives don't say anything at all on this matter, but there are two, the database directive and the copyright directive, both say we are without prejudice to access laws, basically. And the PSI directive itself says the directive is without prejudice, it only says so in the recitals, without prejudice to intellectual property rights beyond the kind of limiting of exercising IP rights. That is, of course, what the PSI directive is doing. So why would we, I think it's really time for the EU legislator to step in and fix sort of this relationship, and particularly between the PSI directive and the copyright and database directive, for a number of reasons. For one, it's clear that because of the InfoPAC cases of the European Court and the subsequent work cases, we now know we have an autonomous work concept. What we have at the same time is national rules which exclude certain types of government information, except for the UK. But these are quite diverse. Like Poland and the Czech Republic have like a really broad exemption, excluding lots of public sector works from copyright. The French don't have anything explicit in their laws, but it's sort of generally assumed, surely, legal acts and court decisions are not, the state can't exercise any rights in those, but it's not actually in the law. In the Netherlands and in Germany, we have a system whereby we say legal acts and decisions and administrative decisions are not in copyright. Other type of public sector works are in copyright but can be freely used unless a reservation has been made. Germany has a somewhat different system. So there are lots of different systems among member states, which is one reason, if you say we have a uniform work concept, that you need to address this this question. And I think what's also important, that if you take a very strict reading of European copyright, and particularly of the copyright directive with its limited system, or its closed system of limitations, then it becomes very difficult to maintain, for instance, the Dutch and the German type of provisions, which basically say, okay, copyrights exist, but you can't exercise them in any way. And I fail to see how that's not a limitation in some respect, you know. So on one element, there is a total exclusion of works. So something is, although it is an intellectual creation and it is original, it's not in copyright because in the case of laws and court decisions, we kind of say it's important that this is public. It's sort of like of the people, by the people type of reasoning. And in the other situations, like in the Dutch law, we kind of have an exemption for lots of public sector information. which technically I think we're not allowed to have under the Information Society Directive. But I don't think, I don't, well, they must have. I'm not sure whether anybody at the Commission has ever thought about, we've forgotten something in the catalogue, in the directive. And I think it's particularly important if these, if this open data idea starts expanding more and more, and maybe at some point the Commission guidelines on licensing, saying do use open licenses, if they sort of like evolve into law, then definitely if you have this kind of system in place, you need to have clarity on the basics of when does IP apply to government-produced information anyway. And so when you start thinking about this, the first thing I always look to is the WITM project, the draft for European. You were involved, no?
Yeah. In the drafting committee. What did we say?
Huh? No, this is what the Berne Convention says, by the way. So it has this. That's another thing, of course. If the EU were to legislate, it has to conform to the Berne Convention. Technically, of course, Berne only tells you about how to protect foreign works and foreign authors. But if the EU is to harmonize, it automatically does so for foreign authors, you know, within the EU context. So it has to sort of stay within the boundaries of this one. And this clause was put in Stockholm, so in the 1967 revision. And it's telling, I think, from Ginsburg and Ricketson say there was only one mention in the debates of this when there was discussion how big the scope would be, what kind of public sector information excluded, and it was from the UK representative, who said surely countries are not allowed to say that sort of like textbooks that are produced by the public sector must be exempt from copyright. I'm thinking he was fearing, I don't know, what textbooks the UK government produced, but all these countries running off, English being a sort of international language, but anyway. But just a few words on the European Copyright Code, what it says on excluded works. I'm thinking, I mean, I should check with Bernd Tuchel or Matthew. I don't know which one in the drafting committee paid particular attention to the work and definition.
I think Anton Quadbly.
Ah, okay. Because I'm guessing it wasn't sort of like high on his list of things to think about when you write a copyright code, which is like totally understandable. There are a couple of strange things, I think, with this proposal. First is, is actually quite sort of standard and sort of matches onto what we've seen that the Berne Convention contains. I would take a broad reading of it and say it must also include, for instance, for legislation, all the preparatory materials that you get. So not just the basic text, but everything you need to interpret it. But particularly B is actually quite radical. It's also slightly, I'm not sure how to read it, and the comments were like really short, so they don't help much. But so why does it refer to documents? It's like, So we're talking, if you take an internal copyright perspective, you'd be talking about works, right? I mean, that makes clear there have to be intellectual original creations and not just documents. I don't know whether that's taken, we have to read that as look to freedom of information law to see what documents are, or not really. But I'm assuming it's not really, wasn't well thought out.
So probably wasn't very well thought out, but I remember us sitting round at least and agreeing that it ought to be a very broad exclusion.
Yeah.
And then in that group, the drafting committee was pretty weird, because I was on the drafting committee as an expert in English, and every time I said, well, you might want to choose a different word, they said, well, the kind of English we're looking for is not real English, it's
Pinglish.
It's European English, so we don't care what you say. So I might have raised some questions about this.
There were some notes taken at that stage, so you might.
I would have to, because the annotated version of the code itself only says something like, so this under this heading, what can happen is that, so like civil servant, for instance, has copyright in a work, and then once it's published, poof, it's gone.
Yeah.
And I think that was sort of like a deliberate. So I don't think civil servants should have copyright in works they produce, but that's another. But anyway, so what's problematic? I think documents is problematic. I mean, why isn't it works? I mean, that should keep it like nice and internal. And published is also that's also a very problematic sort of term, I think. Because Freedom of Information Acts, the way you see the way how they operate is that you can also request information, and if it's released to you as one individual, that means others can have access to it as well. Because it's not privileged access. I mean, some Freedom of Information Acts also have provisions on privileged access, but I'm talking about the public access part now. So I wouldn't call that published, but still, that kind of information is as public, should be, as proactively published information by government. So it doesn't make sense to make this distinction. And then, of course, the question is, what does published mean also in relation to, I don't know, data sets and other things? We might look to the Berne Convention to look at published, like making something available in sufficient numbers of copies to, what is it, reasonable need of the public or something?
Need. Yeah, no.
But that's sort of, yeah. But it's quite tricky because you either have to start looking at local laws to decide which information falls under Freedom of Information Acts or other type of statutes on public registers, like access to company data or land registry data and so on. Or you have to find some autonomous way of interpreting this. And I would say it definitely would have to cover all information that is public under Freedom of Information Act. So this supply on request has to be covered somehow. I do think it actually goes very far, because if you look at today's the UK again is a good example, but we have the same system in the Netherlands and in many countries have this. For instance, a company's register, even though it's clearly a public task, there's legislation in place, how it should be run, what should be in the company register. We actually have a directive at the European level saying all member states must have a company register, blah, blah. But these are run in many countries on a user pays basis. So they're not funded by general taxation, they're funded. If you're a company and you have to be registered, you pay to be registered. If you're a person who wants to know something about the company, you pay to get the data. You can't have a funding system like that if you don't have IP to sort of back it up, to control downstream uses of this data. And this clause, if we take a broad reading of official documents, which I support, would kind of say, okay, all these kind of things, you have to start doing them under general taxation schemes, which is, from an economic point of view, not necessarily a very efficient way of running sort of these type of public registers. So I think it goes quite far. So I would be much happier, I guess, with keep this, and then maybe the text could also just switch to works, so we make sure if in the future it becomes much more common to have like spoken legal acts, or maybe we find a way of visualizing things or do it differently, like not print or text, just use works.
Recordings of,
yes.
During the process.
All this kind of thing. If you just use the term works, then you're settled. You cover all this spectrum of different types of things. And B, I would actually, I think I still prefer sort of more Dutch-German model, whereby you say if it's made available, you can freely use it unless a reservation has been made, on the condition that reservation is actually made with the information that's released itself, so you don't have to, and we have the technical capabilities to do this now. For instance, Creative Commons licenses work this way, right? You attach like a link to the licensing information, you put it in the metadata, so that machines and people will know what rights are exercised with respect to this information. So it's doable to do that now, which is good for transparency. But that at least will allow you for some information where that can be useful to keep in place, like attribution requirements, or to continue systems like the one I just described,
So can I clarify? You would not have them as excluded works.
No.
You would have them as protected works, but then have
as a default
mandatory
free use.
Terms as to exploitation.
Yeah. So as they would be formally they would be protected, but the rights have to be, and then we get to the formalities. The rights would have to be reserved by an explicit statement. Otherwise, you're free to use it. So it's not as if the copyright completely disappears.
Okay.
And what this also would do, because that's another problem, if you look at sort of like the huge amount of resources public sector bodies have, and how much actually information they production they outsource, and how, you know, first of all, they don't know where that data come from, most of them. They've not never done IP management because that's not their business. I mean, Ordnance Survey have done that. There's only a few big sort of information producing entities, I guess, in each country who know pretty well what the IP status is and sort of like where their data come from and who owns it. But many public sector bodies have no idea. They've never really had to do this. So there's a huge legacy problem in terms of figuring out where the IP is. If you introduce a system whereby you say publish is losing it, that might have a chilling effect. Because if they can't be sure they have all the rights, there might be bits of data from, you know, external contractors, and they haven't made sure that there's been a transfer of database rights or copyright. That might have a chilling effect on the decision to release data for reuse by others. So I think it's too radical. And I think that a sort of like a less radical solution would actually help improve access and reuse to government information more. And then the question, of course, is the European Commission going to take this up at some point? They could if they wanted to, so like they have a good opening now, because there is actually the member of parliament in the European Parliament who's a rapporteur on the review of the Information Society Directive, so like on the review and thinking about new exemptions and limitations, and nothing about public sector information has been said in that context, which is strange, but it just shows you that the Copyright Unit, who's now, I think they're now actually in the same Directorate General. The Copyright Unit was with Internal Market Directorate General. The Open Data people are with the Information Society Department. And of course they talk to each other, but they're also sort of competitors over like IP issues and so on. Maybe that'll improve, I don't know. But it's strange that it hasn't come up so far. But anyway, so there's a resolution now in Parliament, and I don't think it's been voted on yet to exclude public sector information from copyright, and that might be a good sort of like hook for the European Commission to start saying, okay, we're not going to do that, but we might do something else. And then it would be good if they just take as much of with them, I guess, as they can. I think that's all I have to say on the topic. I'm happy to take questions on